broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome to today's episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Or I should say this week. Today sounds like we do it every day. We don't. We're not that skilled. But this is Mark Kohler, your co-host with Matt Sorensen in the house, talking about tax and legal strategies this week.
Yeah, baby. And God, I just didn't start off right, did we?
No.
A little fumble early on, but you pick the ball back up and you're running down the field, okay?
I'm running down the field, baby. It's tax season week for us. This is the last push. October 15th is kind of a big day for some of you. Are like, what? I thought it was April 15th. No. Everybody can punt. You can punt on April 15th.
All the football analogies are flying already.
Yeah, but this is the final quarter, double overtime, sudden death, October 15th.
Yeah, you don't get the ball back. It's over.
It is over.
No extensions.
And some of you are like, oh my gosh, all those idiots that extended. Hey, let me forewarn you. Statistics show, I've said it for years and it's true, the later you wait to file, the less chance of an audit. See, the IRS is already auditing your return if you filed back in April. They're looking at your return. Mine, they haven't even seen my return yet. They're not going to see it by the time I slow mail it on October 15th. It's November. They're already thinking 2018. They're like, just get rid of these. We've already assigned all our audits for the year. But I know that sounds funny, but that's kind of really what happened. So
yeah, and it's like, it's in the end of the game here. Do you want to hold on to the ball as long as possible? Okay. Don't give the other team, the IRS, the ball when a chance to score. Okay.
Ooh, that's a good analogy.
Give them as little time as possible.
I've never thought of that one. That's good. Yeah. Wow.
There you go. Yeah.
Time management.
Exactly.
Time management.
It's that clock management that all the good coaches know. Managing the clock.
Man, some of you may thought you were listening to Tax and Legal today. Actually, we are now sponsored by ESPN. And whatever. Anyway, folks, we are here every week talking about tax and legal strategies, trying to keep it fun, trying to keep it real. It's a dry topic typically, and we can be cheese balls at times, but we want to always give you accurate, important information. And if you want more from us and you find it helpful, head to refreshyourwealth.com, refreshyourwealth.com. We've got some free ebooks there. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter, hear everything that's going on that's cool, tax deadlines, cool little YouTube vids. We want to be your tax and legal resource. We're the only podcast for tax and legal you should be listening to. This is it.
Yeah.
Right here.
And, there's a top 10 list of top 10 business and investing podcasts out there. Refresh Your Wealth was on the list. And in fact, I can't remember the person's name that created this list. They're quite the authority on this, I'm sure. But they said this is the one podcast, if you had to pick any, to actually listen to because it's got so much practical information, and because Mark and Matt keep it actually light and entertaining so you can actually hold on for a full hour of tax and legal.
Well, enough high-fiving in the locker room for us. Time to get out on the field. Boy, any more football analogies, people are going to just, turn off their listening device. So, okay, well, today we've got a really interesting topic. In fact, I would say, Matt, and I think you might agree, this is going to be one of our more technical podcasts, radio shows. We're really tackling a technical topic, and that is deferred sales trusts. We even titled the podcast, "What are these deferred sales trusts, and why are they so popular?" It's a high-end strategy, but many of our listeners do make money. We want you to. And so it's an important strategy. I've got a legal tip that's pretty high end. So, this is going to, for those of you that have been waiting for a little more meatier show, I think this is it.
Yeah. And this deferred sales trust, this is a estate planning team, an advisory group that has kind of coined this term, and that, like, I think they've even trademarked it. But essentially what it is, it's a tax deferral strategy. So if you have a highly appreciated asset, real estate, a business, it's a way to sell it and essentially defer the tax. So we're going to get into the detail on it. I just want to give some preview of what the heck it is. It's a tax deferral mechanism, kind of like a 1031, but you don't have to rebuy a property, 1031 exchange. So we're going to get into the nitty gritty on that. And we'll even have a guest, Randy Lubke, who's a investment advisor who's helped some clients through this process from the investment side of the game.
I was just going to say that he really does know the intricacies of these. He's been through them. He's seen them succeed. He's got clients that are singing his praises that are now sending him Christmas cards every year. So the tax savings can be substantial, but there are pros and cons. There are risks with any aggressive tax strategy. So we're going to break it down. But man, you know, gosh, thanks for everybody's patience. Matt and I get on the show. We fumble the ball a little bit because we are meeting with clients every hour. This time of year just gets so, so busy. Matt and I were both on consults. We jumped on our recording software here for today. We're not going live. Our live show, this is a good chance to make this plug. Next week is our live show, which is once a month. Mm-hmm. It's our call-in show and open forum. Now, if any of you have a question that you'd like us to cover, a topic you'd like us to cover, make it concise, but send us an email now before next week. It'll go out in the newsletter with a reminder. But for those of you that are regular listeners, you know what to do. Send it's first come, first serve. So many of you may want to send that in right away. But we're on our consults every day. Matt, I had a funny one today. Mm-hmm. I try to keep even my consultations light, and I have new clients that call up. They're like, hey, I'd like a tax and legal conversation, and mm-hmm. look at my return. Here's what we're doing. And they expect a fairly serious conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes they get it. Sometimes they don't. But they get killer content. I mean, I give them some strategies.
Yeah.
But sometimes their marriage plays into it. This is true. I mean, this was just a call earlier this morning. Marriage plays into a lot of these strategies, especially with Matt Sorensen's self-directed IRA wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Unmarried couples, woo!
Yeah.
It's wild, wild west, right?
That's right. Yeah, I have lots of clients who are, you know, they have their IRA and they're transacting with their spouse, you know, and
get in trouble.
Their spouse yet. Their girlfriend, whatever. But then when you get married, you're considered disqualified. You're not able to transact between each other. So it's actually a good strategy, by the way. You know, if you want to delay if you got a commitment problem, you want to delay the marriage, just have your IRA do a transaction with your girlfriend or boyfriend. And then you can kind of, sorry, we can't get married. There's going to cause prohibited transactions. I'm going to lose my IRA if we do this.
Yeah. And what's more important, you or my IRA? And then that conversation comes up, which is never a fun one.
Yeah.
Because that's a hard one. Yeah. Close so call. We are marriage counselors as well as tax advisors. And I guess apparently we were discouraging marriage across America. We're not saying that because getting married can also provide some other great opportunities. The real estate professional status, huge. So, you know, everybody's situation is a little different. This is why your click, 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 go to LegalZoom strategy doesn't work for a lot of people because we see the depth of these questions. So anyway, on my call this morning, they were brand new clients, and I started joking around, and I didn't think they expected it because they were kind of like quiet for. So I said, "Yeah." So the woman on the call, I said, "Yeah, she called me earlier, and we need to talk about marriage, and there's some commitment issues." And the guy was totally quiet. He's like, "Oh my gosh, did she really call?" And I could just hear on their line, "I didn't call him. I didn't call him." And I was like, "I'm just joking." And they're like freaking out, and they started laughing. And I said, "Because here's the deal, you know." And then I talk about prohibited transactions. They're like, "Oh, we didn't know where you're going with that. Oh my gosh, that makes total sense." And anyway, they loved where I went with it, and it made for a fun call. So you see, even on it, you're paying for a consultation and you're paying for entertainment. That's really what's going on.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I don't know
at least
what
I'm selling it.
Yeah, you're getting it whether you want it or not. So,
yeah. Anyway, so and some of my calls are pretty boring, so don't have great expectations. Depends on my
now
mood.
You put a high bar up there. Someone's going to expect some entertainment, and you know, I actually feel like that. People that especially listen to the radio show, they come and get on a consult. It's like, I got to be funny. Maybe I don't know. I don't know what they're expecting today.
Yeah, it's a high bar we set for ourselves. But I started the morning out with a rock star. And I still have not received my case of rock stars from Rockstar Corporation. Are they owned by Coke now? Pepsi? I don't know. They're owned by someone, I'm sure. They've made billions.
Probably. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Okay. Now, who's going to lead us off with a tax tip or legal tip? All right. It's up to you, Matt. You make the call.
I got a tax tip. Let me hit the tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Well, I love the tax tip guitar riff. It's just another reminder.
That's why you wanted to do the tax tip. Uh-huh. You wanted the riff.
And I'm trying to think of what my tip's going to be right now. Okay. So last week I gave the tip about Coverdells and 529s and the differences between them. These are two ways to save for college for your kids or grandkids. And I actually had some questions come in by email. I had two different questions come in from the tip alone, which I thought was pretty good. And one of the questions I thought was
– So we had a listener last week.
So we had at least two listeners. Yes.
Okay. All right.
My mom and my dad. So
from some dad. You're like, Dad, I'm already through college, but thanks for the question. Yeah. I could have used this.
Yeah. So, all right. Here was the question though. The question was, could I roll 529 money to a Coverdell IRA or ESA, what they're called? And that was an interesting question. I didn't actually know the answer, so I had to research it. I went to weblawyer.com, kind of like what your doctor does when you go in and they're like, what does this guy have? I got to go to webmd.com. But that was a good question. The answer is no. You cannot roll 529 money to a Coverdell, but you can do the opposite. You can roll money from a Coverdell to a 529.
Now, because 529s suck. Exactly. And Coverdells are cool.
Now, sorry, here was – I know. I was like – the answer I gave was like, well, no, but you can do this. And his response was, well, crap. I kind of rather go the other way on this. But it makes sense because if you think about it, the 529s, you could put like hundreds of thousands of dollars into a 529, whereas the Coverdells have a contribution limit of what you can put in. So if they allowed you to just put a ton of money into a 529 and roll it to a Coverdell, it would kind of be this backdoor method into the Coverdell. So it does make sense. The Coverdell has a limited contribution amount, but if you want to get out of the Coverdell and get it into a 529, that is an option, but you can't go the other way. So,
you know, and what makes me mad about this, I'm just on a political standpoint, since there's a little bit of politics going on with tax, you know, legislation right now. In fact, I do have a senator that might listen to me, but your local representative, any of you could make this call, because here's the issue. College, cost of college education is skyrocketing. It's expensive. Number two, college debt is a plague on many of our graduates right now. It is brutal out there. And all they're giving us is a measly $2,000 Coverdell IRA to save for college. Seriously? You can't even – the tuition deduction for college expenses is a joke. You phase out of it if you make too much money. And you can barely write off your interest on student loans. Why can we not come up with a better tax incentive for families to save for college? The Coverdell should be at 10K, 5K at least. I mean, it's a joke. And I should really talk to a legislator and say, oh, this is a slam dunk. Who's going to oppose this? I mean,
give you a tax deduction when you put it in, kind of like, you know, and it'd be above the line type stuff like the HSA, because you're not getting a tax deduction on the Coverdell either. But yeah, politics and policy, that's all just, you know, fantasy land really. So, but there's your tax tip for the day.
Yeah, you know, I like it,
tax
Matt,
tip,
right?
Or weekly tax tip.
Yeah, so here's again, I think one last takeaway on that is any of you that have children under age 18, and I think once your kids are in college, the Coverdell and the 529 are old news. It's too late at that point. But any of you listening that have children under age 18, I think you need to start upgrading your education and just making sure you understand the differences between Coverdells and 529s, self-directing, getting your kids involved in real estate, getting them involved in small business, getting them involved in your business. I've written an article on 5 or 6 ways to deduct college expenses because of that.
Think too, you know, grandparents also, this is, and I've had some clients that I think are just, this is like a cool grandparent thing to me that I want to be doing. Which is, and hopefully I'm far away from that, but But they'll go set up Coverdells for their grandkids, and they'll self-direct them. And when grandpa or grandma's out doing a real estate deal and self-directing their retirement account, it's like, oh, I'm going to bring little Johnny's Coverdell in that has maybe 5,000 bucks in it now. You know, I'm going to bring Sally's in that's maybe got 8,000 now. And they just put give them a little piece of the deals, but they're growing these over time, putting the money in when they're young. And that's a great gift to give that child. And it's a good way to save to let them then, you know, be able to pay for college. And that's, I think, a great gift to be giving them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Probably we could spend a whole show on this. So we better jump over to our next topic that some of you might care about, since those of you that are lack any posterity or children could care less about that first tip. So let's move on to the legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Now, here's the legal tip. I want to talk about, for a moment, the Dynasty Trust. Ooh, I said this is deep. Dynasty Whoa. Trust. Now, this is this is one I think I'm going to do a little article and a video on next week. So you'll see maybe some follow-up on this in the newsletter. But I just want to get it out there for a couple minutes today. Let me just define the Dynasty Trust first. The Dynasty Trust
is this from Duck Dynasty? Is this where this originated?
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure they have a Dynasty Trust.
Is this how they plan their estate?
Yeah, they're loaded now. So
that's
FYI.
True.
So
all right.
Yeah, they better have a Dynasty Trust. Basically, what a Dynasty Trust is a trust that can live on for many generations, for your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. Many of the super wealthy in America, the one percenters, the two percenters, whatever you want to call them, they have these dynasty trusts and have used them for years, where they can leave money to generations down the line. Think of Rockefellers, whatever. So many people think, well, I don't make that much money. I'm not worth that much. I would never do anything like that. Thanks for the tip, Mark. But no, hold on. Hold your horses. Because you can establish a dynasty trust for even $500,000, maybe $1 million. Maybe you've got a life insurance policy and you're like, you know what? I've got my spouse taken care of for life, you know, with some other investments, or I'm okay. I'm single and I don't, you know, where do I want to leave my life insurance? You might have some real estate that you've built up. A dynasty trust is outside. This is another major point. It's outside of your typical estate plan. All of you listeners should be having a will and trust, some sort of estate plan for your real estate, your business, your family. Single, married, his, hers, ours, I don't care. All of you listening right now, 50% of Americans do not even have a will. So I know you're out there listening to this. Get your will and trust done. We can help you with that. We've got great paralegals and we do it affordably. Side note. But the point is, the Dynasty Trust is kind of a sister to your estate plan. So you got your will and your trust, and I'm going to leave my stuff here and Blair, my kids, parents, brothers, sisters, spouse, whatever. But the Dynasty Trust says, I'm going to carve out this extra $500,000, $1 million or more, whatever, and I'm going to leave it in this trust to benefit a charity, benefit my grandkids, and I want to pay for their college down the road, or I want to pay for disadvantaged youth in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I don't know. I don't know why I said Milwaukee, but I'm just – throwing that out. There's probably a disadvantaged child there. No offense to you Wisconsinonians. But the point is, what I'm trying to get at here is you can set it up for anybody you want. And that's what's cool about a dynasty trust. I love to get on the phone with a client and go, okay, who do you want to leave this money to? What do you want to do with it? What effect do you want to have on society or the community? And that's where you can do some really neat things, especially in small town America. It's just, I think it's really neat what you can do with a dynasty trust to leave a dynasty. So think about it. And again, some of you that are single are like, oh, I don't have kids. I don't need to worry about it. Well, frankly, you need to worry about it the most. Mm-hmm. Where's your stuff going to go? You're not going to live forever. I mean, news alert. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's the dynasty trust. So we'd love to work on those, help clients.
I like that.
Leave a legacy.
I like that, you know, because when you're gone, you know, I think – planning for your death is obviously just not a fun thing to do. But if you've worked so hard in your life to make money, to acquire assets, you need to spend just a little bit of time planning your estate and have a little bit of thought into what the heck's going to happen when you die. Because 50% of you have an estate plan, 100% of you die. So just a numbers game there. Just a numbers game.
Well, Matt, excellent comment. And boy, the show is just rocking it. I'm feeling good today about show so far. The show so far today. And it's going to be good. Okay. Well, should we bring out our guest and introduce this intense topic today, where many of you for years to come will come back and listen to this podcast and go, wow, I need to know what deferred sales trusts are. And this is the podcast to listen to.
Yeah. Breaking it down here on Refresh Your Wealth. Let's get the guest on. Let's get Randy on.
All right. Well, I get the honor of introducing our guest because, man, I've spent more time with this guy than I've wanted to the last year. Randy. Boy, that sounded bad. But Randy is my...
way to bring someone on this show.
Yeah, thanks. I make people feel good about themselves. Yeah. Randy is the co-author of my newest book. And so I can't say it's my book. It's our book. Randy and I have co-authored a book that will come out November 15th, titled The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom, What Wall Street Isn't Telling You. And I thought I need to partner with an insider in Wall Street to help write this book. And guys, I'm pretty excited about it. Entrepreneur Magazine is really promoting it big time. You're going to hear all about it in November and December as we get closer. But it's about taking what Dave Ramsey and Tony Robbins and Susie Orman, what they talk about, to the next level, specific to the entrepreneur. I love Dave Ramsey. I like Susie Orman. What they teach is powerful, but they don't hone in on the entrepreneur once they get past getting out of debt and being smart with your money. What do you do as an entrepreneur next, and how do you build that wealth? So that's what our book is about. Little shameless plug, but I just believe Randy to be one of the most independent, forward-thinking, owner of a registered investment advisory firm. He's an investment advisor. He's got credentials in real estate and mortgages. He's got more initials after his name than Matt and I combined, probably. So we're just very impressed with Randy, and we're grateful to have him here with us today. So that was a long-winded introduction, but I want everybody to know how much we do believe in him and know that he gives a straight answer. The other day, I just want to point this out. We were in Seattle or Sacramento doing a little presentation, and Randy got up and said, I would rather have you buy real estate than stock. And I was like, whoa, this is a stockbroker saying buy real estate? I mean, you just don't hear that. And that's how independent he really is. Now, he recommends you have a well-balanced portfolio of all things, including Wall Street products. But he's just an honest guy, and he's not going to just load you up with one product in particular. So we're grateful to have him here with us. And Randy, we are excited to talk about these deferred sales trusts. We are not an expert in this area by any means, and we know you are. So welcome.
Well, thanks, Mark. And I guess you said enough good things after that initial introduction. I forgive you.
I was digging myself out of a hole. Yeah.
Thanks.
Married. It took him 2 minutes to dig back out of it, but he made it. Yeah. Yeah, he made it. All right. So, well, Randy, let's dive into this. And let me first say, I mean, just to give people a little background on this deferred sales trust. This is a coined term that I know a group of lawyers and advisors have kind of coined themselves, and I think even trademarked. But it's essentially a strategy to sell a business or an asset, whether it's real estate or it could be your company if you're a business owner, that has appreciation, and I know that has value, and defer the tax on the sale. So that's what I understand it to be, but maybe you can give us an example basics of it. Maybe an example of someone who's used it and kind of how it worked and what their motivations for it. Like, why do people want this, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Sure. Well, yeah, exactly. You hit the nail exactly right on the head. It's a way to sell a highly appreciated asset and not have to pay taxes on the sale when it commences. So, you know, most people are familiar with a 1031 exchange. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, a 1031 exchange is really a deferred sale, right? We're selling a piece of real estate that's appreciated in value, and we're going to buy another piece of real estate and defer all those gains until sometime in the future. Maybe never pay those gains if we own that property at our death. So mm-hmm. The deferred sales trust works very similar to that.
Okay. Give us an example, maybe, of someone though. I'm trying to like just a quick example of someone doing it, how kind of the couple nuts and bolts of how it works.
Sure. So I'm going to explain one that we just completed. And this was about a highly appreciated stock, so stock ownership in a company. And by the way, whether the company is a a publicly traded company or was once publicly traded, or if you own the company yourself, a family business, this would be a good approach. It'll work either way. So this particular client, he purchased stock in a family business, a small company. I mean, a big small company, but a small enough company that, mm-hmm. you know, typically the problem with these closely held companies is the stock's not liquid. Mm-hmm. And, fast forward like 30 years later, the company did very well, and it was acquired just a few months ago. And the acquisition price was like $2 billion, a little over $2 billion. So it was a big sale.
That's a small company. I like
that. Okay. Yeah, it's a big, small company. I mean, you know, relative to New York Stock Exchange companies, it is kind of small. But relative to a private, you know, a family closely held business, it's huge. So long story short, along the way, my client acquired some of the shares of this company as a key employee. And he had about $250,000 invested in those shares. Well, those $250,000 ended up being worth about $5 million when the company sold. So huge capital gains, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Right. So, you know, the tax on that, even with the long-term preferred long-term capital gains rate, would have been over $2 million. It's a big check to write.
Yeah, you got everybody. The IRS, the state, you got the Obamacare tax or whatever you want to call it, investment income yeah. tax, you know. You got all those yeah. things hitting.
Most of my clients that would write a check for $2 million would probably go into cardiac arrest. We'd have a death on our hands. I can't imagine writing a check to the IRS for $2 million. I'm like, I'm moving to the Philippines.
Yeah, it's like when you win the lottery, you always go, yeah, but you know they got $200 million, but they're only going to get 50 of it. Well, they still got $50 million. So at the end of the day, he would have been happy, but he really was looking for ways to obviously to mitigate that. And you know the choices are basically three: you either give it to the IRS, write the check; you can give it to charity, which is a way to mitigate the taxes; or we can do this deferred sales trust, and we opted for a little of each, actually. Part of the money he wants and needs and has uses for. So on that portion of the money, he'll pay the taxes on it. But for the large majority of it, it's going to go into this deferred sales trust. And so that's what we did. So here's the mechanics of it. So basically the stock that he has before the sale is put into trust. And it's sold for in exchange for a promissory note, basically an installment sale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with real estate, it works a little different than it does with stocks. In this case, basically, we really set up like an annuity to take that chunk of cash and then pay it out to him over the course of 20 years. With real estate, you can actually put it in and then defer that sale multi-generational. So even beyond the death of the original owner, it could be passed down to the heirs just like an IRA. But getting back to this story, so what happens is it goes into this trust. There's a trustee that is responsible and now the owner of this asset. And this is kind of a scary thing because if you think about it, he basically gave away $5 million of stock to this trust in exchange for the promise that the trust will continue to pay this annuity to him for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, right? Now, the security for that, of course, is that debt. And so at any point, if he felt that the trustee was not managing it properly, he could pull it and get the money back.
Okay. Now, so this deferral, so these payments he gets over 20 years, mm-hmm. Is really the tax savings, the time value of money that I'm not paying this all at once, I pay taxes over time, or is there an actual tax savings, like a lower rate or something like that?
You're correct. It's the time value of money, because ultimately, as that money's distributed, he's paying the tax on it, but he's paying it slower and over time. And now he also has control as to when he wants to pay the tax. So let's just say for some reason that at some point in the future, they do away with long-term capital gains. At that point, he could exercise the entire contract, redistribute all the money and not end up not paying the long-term capital gains on it. He has control of when those taxes are going to be paid.
Okay. All right. So that's the nuts and bolts. I know there's a lot of specifics you were starting to allude to in there, but that's pretty exciting. No. It's a deep topic. So clients that are considering doing this, I'll just one more question on this point is you brought up the word trustee and trust. The person that sells the stock or the business, they can't be the trustee of their own trust.
No. And in this example, it goes into an irrevocable trust. This is how, and so there's also some estate planning benefits from that as well.
Let me ask here on the trustee part. So I'm not trustee. I've got to have some independent party be trustee.
Yes.
And the trust is irrevocable. So I can't undo the trust. Once I start this thing, the asset's in there. Now, who is the person that you typically make as trustee? Is there, you know, people that typically fill this role? Is this a lawyer? Is this some advisor? Who is in this role as the trustee? Can I pick them?
Yeah. So the trustee has a lot of responsibilities, obviously. They're a fiduciary, of course, number one. They also need to understand how these things work. So you can pick a trustee, but you really want to pick one that does this regularly, that knows the details of the transaction, because they're also responsible to make sure that the taxes are filed correctly, that the distributions are made on time. There's a lot of responsibility that comes along with being that trustee.
Okay. Now, is there, I suspect, an asset protection benefit? Because if I was to sell this stock or my business and get this big chunk of money and just put it in my bank account, and just have it there as a potential target, with an irrevocable trust like this, and again, I'm kind of new to these deferred sales trusts, so, and even though I try to hold myself out as a asset protection guy, would this be treated much like a charitable trust or an ILIT or a type of trust where there's some asset protection benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. The money is outside the estate. The money is asset protected because it doesn't belong to them anymore. And the only risk is as the money is released to them through the annual annuity payments, then that money, of course, is back in the estate. But a large chunk of money is gone, out.
So that's where you have a trust protector. And if there's someone with a pending lawsuit or judgment against you, the trustee can say, I'm going to hold back this year's payment. And then that ability to do that is what dissuades a creditor from coming after the trust too.
That's right. And the trust protector part is really important because, this money's got in the trust and we want to make sure the trustee does the right things. But at some point, if the trustee doesn't do the right things, they need to be replaced. And that's where the trust protector comes into play.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's a good part to have. Let me back up though. I just want to kind of say who fits well into this structure. You know, who's the right type of person to do it? I think to me, it seems like someone who doesn't need all the income now, is maybe in a higher tax bracket. So they're wanting to defer these taxes over time. They may be frustrated with paying too much tax already. And they just want a stream of income to be paid out over time. I mean, is that the typical person that's going for this? Like if I want the money now and I want to have control of how to reinvest it myself, it doesn't really work too well, does it?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. You don't need the money now. You don't want the money now. And therefore, because you don't want or need it, you have the opportunity to defer the taxes. That's
right.
Key. Right. And again, think of it like a 1031 exchange, because that's pretty familiar to everybody. You know, we have a piece of property. We're going to sell that property. There's going to be a gain on that sale. We don't need the money. We just want to roll it into another investment. So we 1031 it.
Well, now on Matt's question, let me follow up with this. Is there a dollar amount where it's a good or bad fit? So maybe someone's willing to wait, but it's only really a $100,000 sale, or maybe it's $500,000 or $1 million. Does it have to be one of these big, super rich deals, or where's a good fit financially on it?
I've not seen that there's a dollar minimum on it, but there's a lot of work involved, and the fees for setting these things up are generally based on a percentage of the asset value, right? So I would say even if you had something that's $100 or a couple $100,000, it could be worth doing because it's just a percentage of that $100,000. The key is what Matt said before, you don't need the money. You don't literally need that money to spend. You have the ability to defer it.
Okay, so now let's talk about the money once it's the sales happened. I've got this note from the trust that says I'm going to get paid back over time. There's some rate of return on that. Now the money's sitting in the trust, though. Tell me what happens to that money. How's it invested? Do I have any decision making on that? What type of investments can the trust have? Do I get the benefit if the investments are doing well? How does that work?
That's a
Yes.
good question, Matt.
That's a great
Jeez.
question.
And that's
So in
really your goal,
reverse
isn't it,
order.
Randy?
Yeah, gosh.
Hey, what
Yeah,
happens to my money? So hey, I'm gonna answer your question in reverse order. So yeah, the beneficiary of the trust definitely gets the benefit of the investments. So if they do well, those investments are in the trust, and it would allow them to potentially receive larger payouts or provide greater inheritance benefits to the beneficiaries down the road. So yeah, they get the benefits of that.
And the beneficiary would be me, let's say, if this was me putting my business into this trust for sale or my real estate, right? I mean, I'm the beneficiary, just so everyone's clear here.
No,
Who's the beneficiary?
you're not the beneficiary. It could be your children, it could be grandchildren, it could be somebody else. You're not the beneficiary.
But I get
Okay,
the money.
okay, I get it. Okay, so this is a good point here. So I've sold the property to the trust under a note. So I'm getting the income under the sale of the property, correct?
100% correct. That's exactly how it works.
But then when you say beneficiary, the beneficiary, that be my spouse, or is it just my spouse and then my kids? Is that
Could be
how it
your
would typically be?
spouse, your kids, or anybody else that you typically name as a beneficiary. So the idea, you got it right. We sell the property to the trust. The trust sells the property to a third party, turns it into cash, perhaps, right? And that cash then is reinvested. My payment for that sale is this promissory note. So I'm going to be getting, say, interest-only payments or principal and interest payments for X number of years. And at the end of the term of the agreement, which typically happens when you die, then whatever's left over in that trust goes to my beneficiaries, which could be my wife or kids or charity or whatever else, normal beneficiaries.
Okay.
Wow. All right. Now, I want to bring up an important topic too, and that is IRS risk. You start searching this on the web, you hear these experts go, "Oh, well, we rely on a private letter ruling," or "We've defended this with the IRS and it's all good." I don't know how rock solid it is. In my years of experience, I always kind of tell my clients, it's not a given that it's totally rubber stamped by the IRS. It can be abused. I don't know. Where do you stand on this IRS legitimacy issue?
Yeah, so this is one of these, I'm not an attorney and I'm not a CPA kind of questions. And I've asked the question specifically. There is no private letter ruling. There is no IRS document out there that says it's okay to do this. But the DST, the Deferred Sales Trust, especially with real estate, is predicated on an installment sale. And installment sales have been around forever. Right? I mean, we
Okay.
don't have any problem with installment sales. The key is that there's no constructive receipt of the money for the person that sells this asset to the trust. The receipt comes through the they get a note, right? It's just like if you sold your home and you got a note exchanged for selling your home, you don't pay taxes until you receive the money. That's the theory. That's how it
Yeah,
works.
but here's my counter argument to that. And I know you gave the disclaimer. You're not the attorney saying this is okay, and I've got a really a consumer advocate warning for everybody here in a moment. But what I would say is my counter argument is that this is a related party transaction. You're selling something to yourself if you use the step transaction doctrine and distill this down to the nuts and bolts. You're really selling it to yourself in a format where the IRS could come in and say, "You know what? We're going to collapse the whole thing. You owe the tax, and we're going to penalize you for pushing the envelope." That's what I'm concerned about. But But here's, but let me follow that up with this consumer advocacy point. If you definitely don't want to knock this out on your own, you're going to use a law firm to draft the trust documents. And there's law firms out there that love to do this, and they work with guys like you, Randy, that are the investment advisor bringing the financial piece together. I think that's great. But what people should demand is a comfort letter from the law firm that's doing the trust that says, hey, if you get audited, we'll pay the penalty. And if you've got that get out of jail or get out of penalty free card, I'm feeling okay about it. But I don't know if the law firms are always giving those out or people are asking for them. Because if I was a law firm, if they didn't ask for it, I may not give it to them. You know, I don't know. I just don't want to throw that around. I don't want that exposure as a law firm. What's your take on that?
No, boy, I agree 100% again. And you have to have that. You have to know that the law firm that's drafting your agreements, A, has the experience, and B, if an issue does come up, they're going to back you up. And they should do that with this letter up front. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I know those that have been doing it. I mean, that's the representations they're making in their marketing materials is, you know, that they have defended people who have been audited on these and they've had, you know, successful experience, you know, in closing out those audits with no changes, meaning, you know, the IRS didn't contest it once they went through the nuts and bolts of the audit. But mm-hmm. I think you have to have that conversation up front because the fees, you're paying tens of thousands of dollars to get these trusts set up. This is not like, you know, the $700 estate plan you're doing online at LegalZoom, okay? This is a pretty complex trust structure, obviously. And there's a lot of advice and planning involved around it. And I think, Randy, even as you were mentioning earlier, I mean, there's different treatments, it sounds like, for real estate versus selling stock.
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of detail. I mean, I've never even heard of that. I didn't realize there was going to be a difference there on that type of asset. So, yeah. So I was going to say on this consumer point, too, is make sure you're getting those representations in writing up front before you pay the tens of thousands of dollars in fees. And the opinion letter, a comfort letter, as Mark called, that's like your security blanket, you know, because you are doing a tax deferral strategy, which can be valid. And this has been out there for a while, and there might be a tax court case that comes down that we get the clear, bright line answer here. But you're kind of in the new frontier, I would say, on this strategy. So just be careful. And we love the concept. I just want clients to make sure they got that security blanket.
And let me give a disclaimer here before I get some nasty emails from deferred sales trust attorneys out there. And I know several. I want to say as a preemptive statement, I'm not saying the deferred sales trust is a bad idea. I've got clients that have used it recently and they've loved it. I know Randy and I have worked with clients that have used them and they're pretty excited about it. And there is no case out there that says they're bad right now, but it is it's the wild, wild west on these strategies. And you just have to make sure that the lawyer you're listening to knows what the heck they're doing and that they're legit and they've got malpractice insurance and they're not working out of a strip mall next to a Liberty Tax. And so just be cautious. That's all I'm saying. I think it's great. You know, as long as they're working, sign me up, you know.
What, the strip mall next to Liberty Tax, what was that? Was that Breaking Bad? What is that, Saul?
Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul.
I should have said he's working out of the back of a nail salon. That's what I should have said. There I should go. Have brought in. And, you know, I missed my chance. I knew it. I had that joke right there.
Next time.
See, this is what. Now, this is how Jimmy Fallon is. He would not miss that. Jimmy Fallon, he's just a
that's
perfect
why,
comedian.
That's
just,
why. That's why he has a top-rated TV show and we got a podcast.
That's probably true. That's probably
there
true.
There you go. Hey, can I jump in here? I want to go back to like the appropriate candidate for something
jump,
like this.
Jump, yeah. Jump in here. What are you, like a guest or something? God.
Well, yeah,
man,
really.
The guest is demanding time on the show.
Okay. So back to the idea of the 1031 exchange. So one of the big issues with the 1031 exchange, of course, is finding that exchange property. And, you know, you have 45 days to identify your property. You've got a long time to close them, 180, but that 45 days can be a killer. And so what ends up happening is a lot of times people will either A, give up the exchange and pay the tax, or B, they'll end up buying properties that they don't really want because they just don't want to pay the tax. Happens all the time. Mm-hmm. this is a really good leg, if you will, because once you put the money into the deferred sales trust, you still have the opportunity to complete that 1031 exchange, even if it's years later. So let me give you a specific example. Let's say I have a highly appreciated apartment building, and it's worth several million dollars, and maybe I have $1.5 million or $2 million worth of capital gain in there, and I just can't find another apartment to or big enough property to exchange it into. So I'd like to see the real estate market collapse again, so I could buy one at a deal. Well, I could sell my property at the top of the market, put it in the deferred sales trust, let that 1031 exchange go on inside the deferred sales trust for years until I actually found a property I wanted. And guess what? If I never found the property, I'd still be able to be receiving the long-term capital gains treatment on the property that I did sell throughout the entire process. So it's really a great way to extend that 1031 window.
Okay. Whoa, slow down, Lone Ranger. So then you're saying that I could direct my trustee to reinvest those assets rather than marketable securities into the property I did find ultimately a year later and continue to build the value of that trust by directing my trustee what to do?
That's correct. So the deferred sales trust becomes a bridge between the 1031 exchange and extends the opportunity out for an unlimited period of time, years.
Kind of like the wardrobe be in the back of the room to Narnia. This could be it. Okay, that one didn't work.
Boy, that one sailed right over. I got to be reading the Chronicles of Narnia now or something. Okay. What is that from?
Okay, sorry. I missed my chance with Better Call Saul, so I thought I'd throw out a Lion, Witch, in the Wardrobe, but it bombed. I could tell right there. I got looks that were not good. Okay. Randy, I love it. That is really fascinating. I didn't know that. So that you can – that's where the real estate intricacy of a deferred sales trust takes it to a whole other level because you can continue to invest in real estate, which I think is what one of Matt's questions early on in the show that I don't think I heard the answer or missed it because there was so much flying around there. But that if with a real estate strategy, you still can indirectly control what's in the trust for years to come and maintain that stream of income and have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, understand it is a irrevocable trust, and you have a trustee that's managing the decisions. But because you have the ability to control aspects of it, you have the ability to do those things I was just saying. There's a lot of people that have these commercial properties. They'd love to sell them, right? They just don't know what they'd buy after they sold it, but they're tired of owning it. You know, they're 70, 80 years old and they'd like to get, just make it be liquid. And this is a way to do it.
Okay. Well,
perfect. Well,
we got to wrap it up here. So, yeah. Randy, are there any final comments you have of using this strategy or any contact information you want to provide to the good listeners of Refresh Your Wealth?
I think we really hit on all the high points, which are, work with a firm that's done this before. Don't try this yourself. Don't go into it, blindly. Make sure that when you do get involved with this, that you get somebody that will back you up if there's any questions from the IRS. All these things are really important. This is a great strategy to look at. And just look at it with a lot of due diligence.
Okay. Contact info, Randy. Did you want to drop that? Everybody knows you where to find you, I'm sure.
Well, I'd love to. The easiest way to reach me is go to my website, and there's a little pop-up there that you can schedule a phone call with me. The website is lifetimeparadigm.com. That's a tough one. Lifetime is pretty easy, LIFETIME. But Paradigm, PARADIG, like George, M like Mary.com. And I'd be happy to talk with anybody about this or anything else related to retirement and taxes and investments and so on.
Yeah, and if any of you email Matt or myself, which many of you do, our listeners are in contact with us. As I mentioned, our open forum shows next week. If any of you want to email us and just say, how do I get a hold of Randy? We'll share his contact info and CC him and bring you two together. Gosh, Randy, great conversation. Thank you for making it simple for all of us. I learned something today, another day of life and another day of learning. So we all need to stay humble and keep learning. And I thought it was great. Matt, you did a fantastic job as my co-host, if I may say so myself.
Thank you. Is this the celebration after the game because we won?
Yeah. We won. We're high five. We are the champions, my friends.
Okay. It's not bad.
A little
not
Queen.
Freddie Mercury.
Did I hit my notes?
Freddie Mercury.
Well, There we go. Hey, thanks everybody for listening. Please mark your calendar next week, Wednesday at noon Mountain Live. You can call in. Live callers get priority, or you can email us a question if you'd like for the open forum show. We'll be back here every week helping bring your American dream alive. Keep it real. And please get out there, give us a little 5-star review, send us a note of what you did, and we'll send you a free copy of our book. That's always an offer of ours. We love those reviews. Helps get the podcast out there so you don't feel like a loner. There's other people listening. We want you to be a part of the big crowd. Randy, thanks for being here, and everyone, we'll see you next week.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.